And a blessed good day to you. You are listening to Law and Gospel on this Tuesday, October the 22nd in the year of our Lord 2013. I'm Tom Baker, your host. And you may have, just before this, heard about the promo about the opera Katie Luther. We have with us someone who's very much involved in that. Her name is Lori Lewis, a lifelong musician and actress. Spent her life in front of an audience. Her love of music began in Lutheran grade school with her first solo in church at 5 years old, and her years as a personality in Christian radio enhanced her ability to connect with an audience. Adding to her experience, in 2003, Lori became a professional opera singer with no previous experience with the San Diego Opera and as a member of AGMA, A-G-M-A. She's also performed with the San Diego Symphony, the San Diego Master Chorale, and has worked with some of the best voice teachers, coaches, and conductors in the world, including Mr. Richard Fredericks, Maestro Eduardo Mueller, Maestro Martin Wright, and legendary director Lotfi Mansouri. She's also the spark plug behind Katie Luther. So without further ado, welcome to Law and Gospel, Lori.
Thank you so much, Pastor Baker. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I listen all the time to KFUO on the app on my iPhone, so it's great.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about the opera, Katie Luther, how it came about?
Oh, absolutely. As you mentioned in the opening, I went to Lutheran grade school, and I remember exactly in fifth grade reading this old biography called Kitty My Rib, which was about Katie.
Yes.
And it had such an impact on my life. I think about it to this day that it really affected my view of a Christian marriage and what a Christian marriage could be like. And so she's always had this impact on me. It was a fabulous book. So I was one of those kids that was always in theater and in music growing up, and I had seen a one-woman play, and it got in my mind that someday I wanted to do Katie as a character, as a one-woman play or musical. And so when I became an opera singer, I started kind of floating around in my mind, I wonder what it'd be like to do a modern opera about Katie. Well, I contacted one of my former professors, which I'm sure you know, Dr. Paul Schreiber, and he and I started chatting about it, and, you know, he just decided to write a play about Katie, and he did this fabulous work. And, in fact, we're going to be producing that as well this next spring and touring both of them together, the opera and the play. So I took that play and sent it to Dr. Glenn Winters of Virginia Opera. And he looked it over and he said, wow, you've really got something here. And he's a fabulous composer. And in a couple of months, he sent me back a score, and I was just blown away. It is just, it's theologically, historically very accurate, and it's this incredible, dramatic, compelling piece.
I have a surprise for you.
Oh.
How would you like to say hi to Dr. Paul Schreiber?
Oh, there's my hero.
Dr. Schreiber, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. It's great and exciting time, especially at Reformation. I wrote the play for Lori, but it was not just about Katie Luther. It was looking at the Reformation and looking at Martin Luther's through a layman's eyes and through a woman's eyes.
How long did it take you to write the play, Paul?
Well, I've reread everything I had about Martin Luther and many of his writings, and then I correlated what Martin Luther was doing with what was happening at home.
Yes.
With Katie Luther. And so that research took about a year. And then I wrote the play in about a month and a half.
Are you pleased with the operatic score that came out of that?
It's beyond what I expected. It's tremendous. And it's quite an honor to have these opera singers.
Yes.
So excited about it.
Well, before you leave us, do you have a question for Lori?
Like a test back in the old days. I remember once in class I asked Dr. Schreiber a question. I said, what would some such and such critic say about this? And he said, that's a good question. Why don't you write a 3-page paper about that tonight and tell us tomorrow? So,
well, I don't remember that. But...
Oh, you don't remember that, eh, Paul? But
it's kind of the way this went. Lori called and asked me something, and I told her, well, why don't you write a play about Katie Luther, because there was nothing available. But I got so interested in it, I wrote it myself.
Is a large part of it a kind of fiction, because you probably had to put words in the mouth of Katie or Luther, or is most of it pretty historic?
Most of it is pretty historic.
Yes.
Because I took much from the very words from letters that Katie wrote her, that people wrote to her. There's two things that are not historic. The last act about Martin Luther bringing in a tree inside the house.
Wow, yeah.
Martin Luther was probably not the first to do that.
The Christmas tree, yes.
Right.
Lori, do you have any questions for Paul before we let him go?
Well, just about the Christmas tree. So that's always been a tradition that Dr. Luther brought it into the home, but we don't. That's not true. I didn't know that. But did he do that practice, even if he didn't invent it?
We don't have any evidence of that.
Okay.
Well look. Dr. Schreiber, thank you very much for calling in, and I pray that this opera will go fine, and I'm going to continue to talk to Lori about it, okay?
Okay, I'm going to stay on the line.
Sure, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Okay.
All right, Lori, why should somebody come to see this?
You know, it's really a unique opportunity to see the Reformation from a woman's eyes. You know, Katie is looked upon as the woman who really set the standard for clergy marriage and for Protestant marriages. And so I think women definitely will find that fascinating. But it's such a compelling story and heartfelt. You know, Katie grew up in the convent, which she was dropped off, I think, about 5 years old or so, and then ended up in another convent at 9, the one that she lived in until she escaped. And so there's a lot of drama that's going on. It's really fascinating because escaping from the convent at that time could mean your life or punishment. So, I mean, this was not a light decision that Katie made. And also the music, I have to tell you, in this is so amazing. People shouldn't let the fact that it's an opera, quote-unquote, scare them away, because it's very melodic and very accessible, and it's all in English. So it's not like, you know, traditional grand operas where you have to follow a libretto. So you'll hear the story, and I have to tell you, it's so exciting in St. Louis at Concordia Seminary that we are sending Janet Hopkins to sing the role. Janet has sung at the Met and traveled worldwide and sung at Carnegie Hall and at the Kennedy Center. And so you are getting a chance to see this world-class artist portray Katie Luther. I mean, no play or story really other than the biographies has ever been written about Katie. So this is a really rare, unique opportunity for you to see this.
Do you have the dates at the Concordia Seminary when it's going to be held?
Yes, it's this Friday, October 25th at 7 p.m., and it's in the chapel. And you can get tickets online for us. It's, we have a website at katieluthertheopera.com. Make sure you say Katie Luther the Opera. Otherwise, all kinds of other Katie Luthers come up. So katieluthertheopera.com. And just this premiere in St. Louis, we're also doing it in Baltimore if people are listening online, and also here in Albuquerque, I'll be singing it at UNM. So this is it. This is the world premiere, and then we're going to start touring in the spring all across America and worldwide.
How long is the opera about?
It's just really a little over an hour. So there's another good thing. It's in English, and it's not like sitting through a Wagnerian opera, which could be 4 hours long or more.
Plus, it's in English.
That's exactly.
Really, really helpful.
Yeah.
I've often wished that somebody would put the Bach cantatas in English, but I think that'd be really difficult.
Yeah, sometimes you lose the poetic form of something. Yeah, so... But some, I think a few pieces are in English, but
this,
generally classical musicians don't like that.
I was really kind of taken that you, when you were 5 years old, you did solo. In church.
I was kind of born with that big voice, and, you know, I was the kind of kid that the Sunday school or the grade school teacher would be worried. They'd call up my mom the night before and say, she's not sick or anything. She's going to be there, right?
Yes.
I kind of was the choir, you know.
Do you remember what hymn you sang?
Oh, that's a good question. I remember a lot of them. I don't remember the very first one. But,
well, 5 years old, that was something. And the idea that the San Diego Opera would take you without any previous opera experience, how did that come about?
Well, you know, I had stopped singing for a while. I started to get older. I think that's another great part of the story, is that I didn't start singing opera until I was 46. So you would think, wow, you know, I'm past my prime and past my opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Well, number one, your voice is in its prime in opera in your 40s. So that's good news. You don't have to be a teenager to sing it. In fact, it helps if your voice is more mature. So I got in touch with a teacher after I saw Pavarotti in concert and said, you know, I really want to sing opera. It just was sort of in my mind. I grew up in Chicago, and I'm part Italian, and I just thought, I want to sing in Italian. And within 6 months, I was in the opera chorus. It's because I had fantastic teachers. And they're really more interested in, you know, you can go to school for music, but if you don't have it innately, it's just, you know, nothing you can really do about it. So because I was just given that gift by God to be able to sing and have a large voice, people can take that and mold it and teach you then. So it's still, though, quite remarkable. AGMA, as you mentioned, the American Guild of Musical Artists, I didn't even know it was hard to get into the union, and it just happened. So,
do you have a CD people can get a hold of?
No, I don't have a CD, although we will have, it won't be me singing this first time, but we will have a DVD available of Katie Luther, the opera. I'm not ready for that yet. Singers, it's amazing, people who even on the level of being at the Metropolitan Opera sometimes don't feel ready to record an opera because, boy, it's just, it's all about just the beauty and the perfection of that music. And so it's something that, I don't feel that I've personally achieved that yet.
There's different kinds of music. For example, I was talking about how in Seattle, they had, in their subways, they had quite a bit of violence going on. And what they did, they changed the music from kind of a rock and roll thing to classical music, and the violence went down over 40%.
Oh, absolutely. And Pastor Baker, there are so many studies now that show you, well, people that take anti-anxiety medications, they have shown that if you listen to 30 minutes of Mozart, it has the same effect as that medicine.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean...
So, how did you come or who came to the decision that the kind of music best for this would be operatic?
Well, you know, it has a lot to do with the fact that I am an opera singer now. So it's just, I feel that it's important because it reaches people in our culture and in Europe and in places where people relate more to that. And it's a piece of art that I think could transcend the culture at the moment. So if we had done it in a style that would be, you know, contemporary, in 10 years, it wouldn't be relevant. But as a classical piece, there's a chance that this could continue to go on and on after us.
Recently, I just viewed the newest rendition of Les Miserables.
Yes.
And they're singing all the way throughout that. Now,
right.
What kind of music is that? Is that operatic? Would you consider?
No. That would be musical theater. And it's just a different technique. You know.
Can you explain that a little bit? I'm very interested in that.
Oh, sure. I mean, I can attempt to. Opera, it's a lot about the vowels that you make, the way that you sing. So, like, if I would say, you know, oh, or if I go, ah,
yes.
It's like a completely different sound, right? So it's kind of like if somebody plays golf, they might relate to this. There's all this technique that you learn, and then you go out and you just have to enjoy and play golf. But if you got up and played golf without technique, you might be able to hit the ball, but it's going to be much more difficult for you. So, you know, a lot of musical theater people, it's more just their natural voice and they're belting it. Whereas we call it in opera bel canto, which means beautiful singing. So it's about singing really beautifully. And the other thing that people often find remarkable is that musical theater people are using microphones, whereas you take an opera singer, especially like Janet Hopkins, who's going to be singing Katie at the seminary, and she can sing on the Metropolitan Opera stage over an orchestra and over a 100-voice choir without a microphone. So it's very powerful voices.
You know, one of the reasons that pastors chanted earlier is because we didn't have microphones.
Mm.
And chanting, therefore, was a way that people could hear in a large congregation. Now,
yeah.
Even though we now have microphones, people still like to chant. I do not chant. I read this book. They said, if you ever do anything 10,000 times, you will become a professional at it. Well, I'm afraid singing isn't my area. I have a good friend who will not sit near me in the sanctuary when we go to worship because I'm so off key. So there's some things, and I think you really hit this correctly, that God provides you with a gift.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, anybody can enjoy singing.
Yes.
And I'm a firm believer that there is no one that is truly tone deaf. It's just a lack of someone giving them ear training or a certain amount of technique. And I think it's really important if you have a child that is interested in music to encourage them. And, you know, you can start getting them some sort of lessons or something if you can go that route as early as possible. They can start learning rhythm. You know, that's the first thing usually children can comprehend, you know, and just fun little songs, that sort of thing. So I had a lot of encouragement. Maybe even if I had a gift, if I hadn't been encouraged, I wouldn't have, you know, be doing what I'm doing now. So I really love to really encourage kids and support them, especially in the higher arts.
Yes, I've often imagined why even in grade school, they don't have a system whereby they can put a child through all kinds of possible vocations, like singing or playing an instrument or doing woodworking,
yeah,
or this kind of thing, to see if there are any gifts there. And then you would kind of know, okay, this is where God has given me a special. I have a son. And I have a CD of his. It's called The Church Year, that he put together with synthesizers before he knew how to read music.
Wow.
Now, I don't have that gift at all.
Wow, yeah.
But he certainly does. And it's just really, once he learned how to use learn music, he was at UMSL. That's one of our schools here in St. Louis, and had one of the best music teachers. But share with me a little bit when you were, for example, trained by, let's say, Eduardo Miller. What did he say or tell you that made you a better singer?
Well, you know, a lot of the things that I've learned from some of the great people I've had the privilege of being around is that when it comes down to it, yes, technique is very important in classical music, and I believe every child that's interested in music, even if they want to go into pop music or other forms of music, really should have a musical foundation, because it gives you, believe it or not, it gives you more freedom. Pop musicians tend to think it's like a prison or something, but it really gives you more experience and allows you to do more. But when it comes down to it, it's what comes from the heart. You know, as an artist, and it's about connecting with people, you know. And so if you're up there on the stage as a singer and you're singing for yourself or thinking, boy, I sound great. I wonder what they think of me. I wonder what they think of my voice. And instead, I go there as an artist, and especially with something like Katie, I'm there to serve people. I'm there to bring them something and to communicate something.
But believe it or not, we're almost at the end of our time. And Dr. Paul Schreiber, are you still on the air? Do you have anything more you'd like to say?
Yes.
Go ahead.
That we both, from the outset, had in mind that this should be a statement of our Christian faith to give people who ordinarily didn't hear the gospel, that they were exposed to it through the Reformation once again.
Absolutely.
That's excellent. We want to encourage people, if they're at all available, this Friday, October the 25th at 7 p.m. And if you want to know how to get tickets, you look up Katie Luther, and that would be K-A-T-I-E, Luther.
Yes.
TheOpera.com. All one word, of course. Katie Luther, TheOpera.com. And you're going to be singing, you said, Lori, in Albuquerque. What's the date on that? Because KFUO is worldwide, and maybe some people are listening there.
Yeah, we're actually doing it the same night, October 25th, this Friday night. And because of our time difference, I'll be just 1 hour before Janet takes the stage at the seminary. So those are both opportunities for you to see this marvelous story. And it's not about me. This is about Katie's story. And she, in this opera and in the play, tells her story very well.
Well, I know that Dr. Paul Schreiber, he works with another woman who puts together some CDs, and he's very careful with the proper theology. So this really is going to be an opportunity for people to understand Reformation theology. And what better time than when we're having the Reformation this Sunday?
Absolutely.
Any final comments, Lori? About 30 seconds.
And again, I want to encourage people to give it a try. Don't let the word opera scare you. This really is about Christianity and about the Protestant, the Reformation. I mean, this is so exciting, and I can't think of a better thing to do on Reformation weekend. Enjoy your service on Sunday morning, too, and then Friday night, make it a fun weekend, you know, all about the Reformation, and you get to see Katie's inside story.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest, and thank you also for calling up Dr. Schreiber. I'm Tom Baker. You've been listening to Law and Gospel here on this Tuesday, October the 22nd. Tomorrow, we're going to be continuing how to apply law and gospel in Christian witness. We've talked about estrangement, evil outside the self, a bondage, addiction, disobedience. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about, is life meaninglessness? Is it no meaning to it? Well, go see Katie Luther on this Friday, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.